Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
All right, the Astros, they take 2 out of 3 from the Washington Nationals this weekend. They lose on Saturday 13-6, but they win yesterday. Another shutout, 8-0. This team is stacking up shutouts, man. Justin Verlander, 5 shutout innings. A bullpen came in. Montero, Stanek, Abreu came in, did a nice job after that. Abreu did a real nice job those last couple innings. 2 innings, 3 strikeouts. And they hit 4 home runs. So things seem to be falling into place for the Astros, who are now 23-12 on the season. The 11-game winning streak is over, Seth, but the 12-game Altuve streak is still alive. The one loss that they've had since Altuve came back from the injured list was on Saturday. He was not in the lineup. So I am now measuring the winning streak by the number of starts Jose Altuve has that they've won in a row. And that number is at 12.
Wow. Right now. Altuve.
Technically, it's at 13 because they won the last game he played in before he went on the injured list. But
he's the straw that stirs the drink.
He is.
Or, I guess if I were to make a short joke, I guess the swizzle stick or something. if I were that kind of
the
bastard.
Bamboo umbrella. Yeah, exactly.
He's the little toothpick thing in a tropical drink or something.
Yep.
So it's looking much better all around. Yuli Gurriel, most notably, who really. It made a small change in his stance last week, and it seems to have really taken hold. He's up to batting .248, and after he'd been just miserable and miserable for a while there. But he's up to a .708 OPS, which might not sound like a lot, but you got to remember that this year so far, the league average for OPS is .683. Sean, that is the highest it's been. That's the lowest the OPS has been. If it were to end the season at .683, it hasn't been that low since 1976.
Wow.
That's how bad the offense is so far this season.
Okay, why do we think that is? Is it dead balls? Is it?
It seems like the dead ball is the prevailing theory. That and a combination of short training camp.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to say. Yeah, short spring training.
Let us know. Anybody, what other theories are floating out there? 713-572-4610 about the really bad balls. Did they finally crack down on sign stealing to the extent now that Cody Bellinger has a lower OPS than Yuli Gurriel? Yes, that Yuli Gurriel that many of you thought was basically half had 1 foot in his baseball grave is crushing.
Do you think Yuli took our advice and started eating more pizza and drinking more soda?
I was trying to evaluate that.
Because he had cut it out of his diet before the season and had lost a lot of weight.
One of the first clips I got to, though, was of Maldonado celebrating with Yuli. Yeah. So I couldn't really tell if Yuli's physique. He looked good compared to Maldonado.
Maldonado
came a little bit out of it. I'm just saying that Maldonado's got a less than ideal physique, right?
Are you amazed that Maldonado is able to crouch for 3 hours at a time for that many games?
It's even different than sometimes pitchers might be a little stockier, but they're stocky. Maldonado doesn't even look stocky. He just looks kind of fluffy, right?
He's chubby.
Yeah,
he's got a belly. He's got a bit of a beer belly. Yeah.
But as a bigger guy, though, too, not like one of these stocky little dudes that's also a little pudgy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am a little shocked that he can be as durable as he is as a catcher.
You told me, I can't remember if you told me on the air or off the air, that I think it was on the air, that Roberta Anding did not like the advice we were giving to Yuli.
Roberta Anding, former dietitian for the Texans and the Astros, current Rice University professor, who's a good friend of mine. She said, hey, maybe lay off the more beer and, what did we say, beer and soda? Soda and pizza.
Soda and pizza is what Yuli had cut out this offseason, and he came in tremendous shape. Good shape that he had a 550 OPS a month and a half into the season. So I said, mix in a pie, dude. Mix in a deep dish.
She said, back away from the soda and pizza recommendation for Yuli. She put an exclamation point on it.
She did?
She was having fun. Well, no, it was fun. Like, she was being jovial about it.
Gotcha.
Roberta,
okay.
The good thing about most sports dietitians is they're very realistic about, like, okay, we understand that most people – like, either in sports or elsewhere, most people aren't going to follow our advice down to the T 100%, you know? So it's a matter of, like, doing the old 80-20 principle. Like, okay, how can we get people to eat healthy 80 or 90% of the time? The returning to eating beer and pizza or pizza and soda, probably not the best advice.
Yeah. I mean, we're just trying something different, you know? It was getting to be a bit of, like, a DEFCON 1 situation with Yuli.
There's something about, not every athlete's ideal playing weight is being super chiseled. We've seen that time and time again.
Yeah.
You know, like, some guys, you just kind of have a set point for body fat that seems to work for you. And if these guys, you always hear about, oh, a guy dropped 20 pounds before the season. He's going to be awesome. And then by 4 weeks into the season, almost 98% of the time, the quote is, I realized, you know what, I probably lost a little too much weight. I had to get it back to a little bit of what I was before. And
that was one of the underplayed storylines back in the horrible 2013 season for the Texans, because there were so many things that went wrong that year. This got kind of buried underneath all of them. But Dwayne Brown had come in that season chiseled. Like, he did not look like a tackle anymore.
He looked too svelte.
You could see his abs, you know. He was very defined. He wore tight, the dry fit, like the really tight spandex shirts. And you're looking at him going, that doesn't look like a tackle. He looked like Aaron Donald is what he looked like. Aaron Donald is like that, but you're a defensive lineman. It's different than being a left tackle. Dwayne went ahead and said, you know what, I'm going to mix in some of the good stuff again. So...
It's hard, though, too, because obviously you don't want to go the other direction. Like, Vlad Guerrero Jr., remember Vlad Guerrero Jr. slimmed down, and it was really, really good for him.
Yeah.
Then it looks like he's bulked up again a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, he doesn't look, he's not svelte by any means.
Right, no, and he never got super svelte or anything, but he actually looked pretty good last year.
Yeah.
But then he bulked back up, so I wonder with him, like, that's the kind of guy you worry about, like, all right, you probably, like, you don't need to be monstrous. You're obviously very good when you're like 235 or 240 or whatever you were last year.
No, but like a guy like Vlad Guerrero Jr., I would worry at some point. Look, he's an MVP. He's a great player. He's a young player.
Yeah.
At some point, I would be worried about the Prince Fielder effect, which Prince Fielder was like Vlad Guerrero Jr. as a young player. Then he gets paid and he never loses weight.
Well, right. And you look at him now, like, so Vlad Guerrero Jr. last year was sleeked down. OPS above 1,000. He was a league leader in on base percentage, home runs, slugging, all those things. And now he's having a good season, but like not nearly to the heights of last year. Which normally, like, okay, you could say, that happens, right? He had an MVP caliber season last year, but this year he's not quite the same. Okay, well, but he also gained weight, so. You just can't discount the weight gain.
You were subjected to the opposing team's broadcast on Friday. Or at least you chose to peek in on it on Friday.
I had to my feed was all messed up, so I had to click on the Nationals feed.
That sounds terrible.
And Sean, I'm not kidding one bit. This is the exact first thing I heard when I turned on the broadcast.
The Washington Nationals saved baseball by beating the so-called cheating Houston Astros. Some stability after that.
Okay.
Well, that was me that was bleeped out.
The bleeped out. That was Seth saying the bleep.
That was, like, I had to go back and watch it and confirm it, but because that was as far back as I could go. But obviously they were talking about, since these two teams haven't faced each other since the World Series, obviously they were talking about 2019.
Yeah.
And how somehow the Nationals saved baseball, even though at that moment nobody even realized there was going to be a garbage can involved being better than everybody
else.
Like,
the Flyers interview had not come out until like a month after that World Series.
No, no. Right. So they saved baseball somehow. The Nationals are like the least likely team that I hate because, for one, they have no reason to pout about 2019. They won the series. And yet, I'm always taken aback by when I see it on social media or when I hear from the clown play-by-play announcer for their team that like they somehow have a grudge against the Astros for cheating in 2017. But I think they want to believe that the Astros were cheating in 2019 and that despite all that, that's how good the Nationals were, that they actually beat the Astros. And not only that, Sean, they did it in the Astros ballpark, and I guess it's their way of beating their chest or something.
I guess. And
now they suck, by the way.
Yeah, no, they're horrible. I was listening to that quote. When you sent it to me, I'm going, okay, let me back away from being an Astros fan for a second. And in what way could I view the Nationals as somehow being some sort of savior in 2019? And the only thing I can think of is that the Nationals in some way prevented the Astros from being able to tell baseball, see, it wasn't the cheating in 2017. We can win without the cheating. I'm guessing this announcer would say something similar about the 2021 Atlanta Braves. Like, that guy strikes me as somebody who doesn't want this core group of Astros to win a World Series again, so that the narrative that the only reason they won in 2017 was because of the cheating. This guy's probably related to Cashman somehow. Brian Cashman from the Yankees.
They saved baseball by proving that two teams that weren't cheating. I'm lost. They lost me on the logic somewhere.
Yeah.
So basically, it was just that clown ass, grandstanding for his fans, pandering to his fans. I was about to say, you could have said, did Boston save baseball by beating Houston in 2018? Oh, no, that's not.
No. Well, of all teams that would pound their chest for saving baseball from cheaters, Boston would have been an interesting one to see them do that. Good thing we saved everybody from the Astros. Oh, that's right. We were mentioned in the same letter. Oops.
And another reminder. The only reason the Astros were even investigated was because they were still as good or better at the plate in 2019. So people thought, well, they must still be doing this thing we knew they were doing in 2017. Yep. Remember, that's what Fires thought. Fires knew what the team was doing in 2017, and because the Astros were still so good in 2019, he thought, well, they must still be doing the same stuff. And it turns out, like, no, they actually got better without doing it, and that, yeah, by the end of the tub thumping, it was actually hurting them more than it was helping them.
Yep.
That's why Fires is such a piece of crap about it. It'd be one thing that if he had understood the entire situation and not believed that the Astros are still cheating, I don't think he would have done it. But he just had to go yapping and making excuses.
All right, The Athletic had an article this weekend about the hiring practices of college football coaches. There's some really interesting lessons in here for anybody out, even in or out of football, in terms of interviewing for jobs. I'm also curious which of these coaches Seth Payne would have most enjoyed doing a job interview with. That's next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Monday, Payne and Pendergast. Talk to the guys on In the Loop in the next segment. Find out what they got going on their show. Yeah. Lopez went and got a certification, a minister certification this weekend because he's going to officiate his son's wedding next March.
It's kind of like what Josh did back when we had the big wedding, Josh's big-ass wedding on 610.
Oh, he went, like one of the, he went and got certified.
He got certified to officiate the wedding, and that couple is no longer together as I understand it. But it was billed as Josh's big ass wedding, even though it was two other people
That's a shock that marriage would not have lasted.
It was a good time.
It was a great bit for sure.
Yeah, yeah, we had all kinds of people. I remember I got up and gave some kind of a best man speech or something, and it was a good time. It got really, really good ratings. For as much as, and I'm sure there are a ton of people bitching about how it wasn't sports talk and everything, and yet it got like the highest ratings ever on a sports show for a certain segment.
It was very memorable, absolutely. This article in The Athletic about interviewing techniques with coaches, I saw the title of this. I'm like, this looks really interesting to me, but I'm always interested in job interviews and techniques and identifying talent and stuff. So
it was about how coaches go about filling out their staff.
Yeah.
And they focus mostly on college coaches.
That's right. And there's some really interesting stories about how some of the guys do it. They let off with Mike Bellotti, the former Oregon coach, and how he identified Chip Kelly, who was at New Hampshire before he got to Oregon and became, you know, one of the greatest offensive minds in college football.
Yeah, they had him come in and basically present plays and concepts to the Oregon QB room.
Yes.
Well, the other guys observed, the head coach and other people observed in the back.
Yeah.
So a very practical test.
Yep.
Like, he just had Chip Kelly come in and present to the quarterbacks, and they saw what a good teacher he was, and then they talked a lot of X's and O's. So, like, I guess that was, like, on one extreme end of the scale where this was very relevant to exactly how the guy might go about his business, like how he coaches the kids, what he actually knows about it. I think the more surprising and shocking parts of this, probably to a lot of people that maybe, like, seeking jobs themselves, was the other side of the spectrum, especially on like the Mike Leach side of things.
Dude.
Mike Leach, it was basically that, like, you might not talk to Mike Leach a single bit about football, and it would be like a 5-hour interview, and at the end you wouldn't be sure whether you actually even got the job or not.
There were two particularly funny things about Leach. That, yes, the first one was what you just said. One former Leach assistant said, quote, "You're not going to talk football, and if you do, it'll be very little." He'd interview guys, they'd have their presentations, their PowerPoints ready, and he just talks and talks, and then he'll say, "Tell me about this." "Well, coach, we ran zone turn," and then he goes, "Well, that's pretty cool," and all of a sudden he's talking about Afghanistan. So there was that, and then what you just said, there were multiple instances where guys walked out and they weren't sure if they got the job or not.
Yeah.
To the point where Sonny Dykes, who was on the staff at Texas Tech, on Mike Leach's staff, was asked if there was an assistant coach that had interviewed and was asked, "Okay, should I have like your dad or Jimmy Johnson call Leach to see if I indeed got the job? I can't tell." And Sonny's advice was, "No, don't get them to call. You should just show up to work like you got the job, and he'll get so uncomfortable about it, he's not going to tell you to go." Like, that's a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah, that is like
a little... That's the Penske file.
Yeah, which I do think was based in real life. It was something... That was one of those Seinfeld plot lines that I think actually happened to Larry David, if I recall correctly. I think that there's something to be said for that. Like, if you were to take this as real world advice, which is that, I mean, these are guys they're interviewing for jobs. I think that there are times where, depending especially on the size of your company, if it's like a super busy CEO type or something that's making these decisions, they're not putting nearly as much thought into it sometimes as you are. and that there is a good chance that maybe they didn't actually intend to hire you right then, but that if you show up, they might not actually remember what their decision was, and they'll just, or yeah, they don't want to go through the embarrassment of like having to explain like, oh no, I was like in the wrong there and I should have explained it to you better. So they might end up just figuring out a way to make it all work.
The, as I was reading the Leach thing and seeing just how much he would stray off of football, I thought to myself, I thought about you, and I thought to myself, I think Seth could get a job like that with Mike Leach. Like, I think Mike Leach, because you're very well-read and very well-rounded, you can talk about things. You're great at talking about football, but you can talk about other things. I think Leach would have hired you in a second, and then I think Leach might not have hired anybody ever again because you might murder Mike Leach by, like, the third week on the job.
Yeah, I don't I would have a really hard time with Leach.
Yeah.
Because I don't like useless meetings. I don't like inefficient meetings.
Yep.
Like I like getting like a lot done in meetings, but very efficiently. And everything I hear about Leach is that it will turn into just some kind of rambling discussion, which is awesome if you're on a podcast or hanging out, having a few drinks with somebody. But like when somebody has you captive because they're your boss and they're just rambling on about stuff, that's not fun. Yeah. I don't think that's fun for anybody. And yeah, Leach is very good at what he does, so people keep signing up to be trapped in conversation with him.
The other big takeaway from this, and it's with two of the coaches they talk, this is it's a really good article. I can't recommend it highly enough. If you subscribe to The Athletic, I would go find it, because if you are in the process of getting hired or you're interviewing for a job, or more importantly, if you are interviewing people for jobs, I think there's a lot of little things in here that you'll find interesting. Sean McVay and Nick Saban are kind of cut from the same cloth this way, Seth, which is it looks like they by and large use their job interviews to basically just scoop intel from whoever's coming into the building and talk to them.
Yeah, it does. And you heard them talk about this with a lot of guys where there's a kind of an interplay between coaches, the coach who's interviewing for the job, not wanting to give everything up, but at the same time wanting to impress the guy who's interviewing them. And they said that this is one of the big advantages Saban has, which is that like everybody wants that job. So people will tell things to Saban to try to impress him that they might not say in any other interview. So meanwhile, Saban is sitting there just getting all this awesome information on how he's going to beat this guy someday or beat the team that he's currently working for. And it's a whole lot of the rich getting richer in that. But then other guys that are like, well, no, I'm only, look, if you hire me, I'll tell you all this, but I'm not going to tell you exactly how we beat you last year.
Yeah, this is what, one example of that, this says, quote, Saban's the best at that. One former tight assistant talking about the coach's penchant for drawing out X's and O's intel from outside sources. One example, in 2012, Saban, knowing that secondary coach Jeremy Pruitt was leaving to go to Florida State, had 5 weeks to get Alabama ready for Notre Dame in the title game that year. Quote, he was bringing in all types of guys, asking them about Notre Dame's formations. He's asking them questions, what would you do to stop this? What would you do to stop that? Those discussions stimulate your mind. So he basically, like when he knew one of his coaches was leaving, used the replacement process for that particular coach as a way to just get more ideas for a national title game that he wound up winning 42-14.
which is
it's like, really smart.
There's nothing illegal about
no.
it. They say this about Belichick too. Like when people get in conversations with him, it's always him taking and never him giving. He's very adept at just kind of utilizing his power that way, that he's gonna soak up as much information as possible. But the other thing I took from this, Sean, like if you're interviewing for any job, it's like it's such a crapshoot as to what a particular coach might be trying to figure out or learn about you that you just can't worry about it. Like with Sean McVay, there was that story where he had asked, was this the Liam Cohen
interview?
Liam
Cohen, yeah.
He was interviewing Liam Cohen, and basically he asked him, hey, what would you do if you saw this formation? And he showed a defense that the Rams had been struggling with, and the offensive coordinator said basically like, gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I have an answer. And McVay was like, yeah, we don't either. And like, so I just want to talk to you about it. So it wasn't like he was like testing him, looking for the right answer or anything. He was genuinely just like, yeah, well, we don't have any answers for this. What should we do in this situation? So where like you could totally see getting flustered that you don't have the right answer or anything, where It's not necessarily that way. Like, some of these guys are actually just looking for somebody to kind of look at things from a different angle.
That's really, really good. Yeah, at that time, Cohen was interviewing for, like, an assistant wide receiver job, and now he's the offensive coordinator of the Rams. Like, here we are a few years later, and he's the OC, which basically means he's going to be the next head coaching hire in the cycle.
That's where they were saying it's more behavioral and not schematic.
Yes.
They're trying to figure out exactly, like, okay, how do you operate? How do you interact with other people? You know, like, how do you process and work through a problem? And, like, with a guy like McVay especially, he probably just wants to see, like, do we vibe? You know, do we have a rapport here? Which is another thing as a job interviewee. Like, you almost got to view it like dating. Like, some people you're just going to be – it's not like a job you're trying to win. It's just like some people you're not going to be compatible with. And maybe if you don't vibe with that boss, and maybe it's not the right job for you anyway. So don't stress out about getting it, because there's plenty of bosses out there,
that was
especially
these
days.
Yes, that was the advice I got. When I got promoted into management for the first time, the CEO of our company, I went out to lunch with him just to pick his brain and get advice for being in management. And he said – he told me hiring is going to be the most important thing. 80% of your success will be based on how well you hire people. And I said, well, do you have any like sort of like rules that you have of hiring, or any sort of like theories or codes that you adhere to? And he said, yes, I have something called the Notre Dame rule. And I said, oh, okay, this appeals to me. What is the Notre Dame rule, Pat? His name's Pat Martucci. He's the CEO of the company. And the company was based in Chicago. Pat said, you know, the Notre Dame rule is this. I am from Cleveland originally. So Cleveland's about 6 hours from Chicago. Notre Dame is about 90 minutes into that trip, about 90 minutes from Chicago. The Notre Dame theory is, if I'm interviewing somebody, I care about what their answers are, but most of all, I just look at them and I ask myself, if I was on a road trip to Cleveland with this guy, would I want to kick him out of the car by the time I got to Notre Dame at the 90-minute mark? And if the answer is yes, I don't hire that person.
Unless they've got something really, really good going for them, like a hot mom in Cleveland.
Yeah.
So you're like, I'm going to go see her.
You might have liked that.
I'm going to go stay here. I'm going to go drop you off at your place in Cleveland because your
hot
mom is
mom.
Hot.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. People may say that it's Golden State versus Dallas, or that it's Miami versus Boston. The biggest feud in the NBA right now that I am enjoying is Draymond Green versus Kendrick Perkins. You listen to this next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents
Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Golden State Warriors are on to the Western Conference Finals. They've been to that level of the playoffs many times the last few years. Draymond Green, evidently Kendrick Perkins had been saying some things on ESPN about Draymond Green that Draymond did not take too kindly to. Here was Draymond Green after the Game 6 win by the Warriors over the Memphis Grizzlies, taking dead aim at old Big Perk.
Like I got saying, I'm scared to shoot the basketball. Scared and me in the same senses is like brutal, you know. But you got a big ogre on TV talking about what Draymond say ain't the gospel. It is the gospel. What I say is the gospel. And, you know, when you say that multiple times, like on several different segments, you must think what I say the gospel. So, you know, you got to come out and shut some guys up sometimes. And you know, I like to show, you know, when you got people out there just talking out the side of their neck, you know, or anybody can make the pass Draymond make, like, that's just stupid. I mean, like, these are people who get employed to talk on TV about our game. And, you know, it's anybody can make that pass. You make that pass. We would love to see it. I played against the guy, by the way. I'm talking about Kendrick Perkins, for those of y'all that don't know. I'm never ducking no smoke. As the Memphis Grizzly towels say, I don't duck smoke. Like, anybody can make that pass. Like, you couldn't. So, good luck.
All right, so that's
so true. You know.
So that's that. Good enough. We got Draymond's point.
He had to pull himself away from a little bit though, because he started to go into his stock. They hire these people to talk about these games, and they don't know what they're talking about. And then he realized, like, okay. I get Kendrick Perkins is a slightly different case than Skip Bayless. So let me revise it a little bit and turn it into just Kendrick Perkins wasn't that good of a basketball player. I guess
he's right about that. Kendrick Perkins at the end. Yeah. I used to say this on our air. At the end, he was the worst basketball player in the league. He was bad.
Well, the problem with Perkins, too, was, like, twofold, because they kept insisting on, like, they kept saying, like, oh, no, we got to play with the center. Got to have a big man in there, despite the fact that they were clearly better. Remember, like, all the numbers showed that they were better going small ball, and they were just insistent on playing with a big man. So, yeah, there's that. But, this is a grudge I like. Draymond just gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
I think it goes back to obviously a lot of the stuff with the Rockets, the Warriors versus the Rockets. But also part of it is that, like, he's a tough guy whose go-to move was to kick people in the nards.
Right.
And
right.
I don't know That's how tough. He and, like, Bobby from King of the Hill could have the same go-to move for their brutishness. That's the part that always rubbed me the wrong way.
All right, so there's a reply to this. There's a retort. Kendrick Perkins.
Oh.
Heard Draymond Green, took out the phone, made a video, posted it on Twitter, and did you do the proper editing on this, Chris? Okay, good. Because there's a lot of curse words in it. here's Big Perk responding to Draymond Green.
Hey, Draymond, man, let me let you in on a little something, man. All that ogre and all that, whatever you say I look like. Man, you ain't cute. You ain't handsome. Man, you better thank that NBA logo. You better thank Jerry West. Man, I've been with my wife since the 10th grade. Dime piece. Before the NBA stuff. So don't get it all twisted and all that, whatever you got to say. And at the end of the day, hey, man, look, I can say what the fuck I want to say when I want to say it. And I'm going to say it. I said that you wasn't looking to be aggressive, that you wasn't the Draymond of old. Yeah, you came out there, you handled your business tonight, you did your thing. No knock on that, but thinking I'm going to shut up or thinking whatever. Man, look, man, you can miss me with all that. I lip box and lip wrestle all damn day. You know what I'm saying? Straight up, boy. I don't give a damn about all that you talking about, man. You crazy as hell. You think you going to shut me up? You going to play with some of these other cats like that, man. You got the game with Big Perk. Straight up carry on
a little third person reference in there. Calls himself Big Perk.
We need to see more of that Kendrick Perkins on television. He had a flow going there.
He cut a promo basically.
That was really good. And also, he brought up the most valid point, which is, all right, Draymond, like, who's calling who an ogre here? Like, are you going to make this about physical appearance, like, or a comeliness? Let's maybe go elsewhere. Like, when he veered it over towards the actual basketball side of things, okay, yeah, Draymond's a better basketball player than Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah.
So Kendrick was wise to call him on that part of it. Draymond. Let's see. The points he made were that basically said that Draymond couldn't pull a woman until he got into the NBA. You should thank Jerry West for any piece that he's ever got.
Yeah. Well,
the
big winner in Kendrick Perkins' rant, Mrs. Perkins. Been with my wife since the 10th grade. Dime piece. I want to play just that part. Chris, can you isolate? I just want to hear Perk. I just want to hear Perk, lay out, basically brag on how he can pull, a little humble brag on the old Mrs. Perkins there. Give me a thumbs up when you got that. Okay, Chris, go ahead. Okay, yeah, give me a thumbs up when you got it. I got to hear Perk drop dime piece.
I could see, Kendrick Perkins, I could see a lot of women have kind of like a Barry White attraction to Kendrick Perkins, whereas I don't know if there's a woman out there that's like, oh, Draymond, yeah, I need a guy that looks like Draymond.
Yeah.
That's my kind of guy. Yeah. So I think that Kendrick definitely wins that battle.
Perk has a charisma about him, no doubt. Give it to me one more time.
Man, I've been with my wife since the 10th grade. Dime piece.
There you go. I just needed to hear that. Dime piece. By the way, Seth, I put up a poll this weekend, as I am wont to do in situations like this. Who do the public think would win the street fight between Kendrick Perkins and Draymond Green? I'm with you. I know. What do you think the percentage is?
93% Kendrick.
A little closer than you'd think. About two-thirds to one-third. About 66 to 34.
That's the dumbest. Yeah, those people are stupid. There's no way in hell. Like, not a single chance in hell. Draymond's got buddies that are tough. Kendrick himself can handle his business.
I think the only thing I would be concerned about with Kendrick Perkins would be endurance. Compared to Draymond,
that's a good point.
Draymond's running up and down a court 82 games a year, and Kendrick Perkins is sitting and catering.
I think Kendrick would know enough to basically he'd get Draymond in some kind of a hold and just kneel on him and chill. Draymond wouldn't understand like how to conserve his energy or anything. He would just be flailing the whole time until he got exhausted, and then Kendrick would finish him.
Someone's asking on the text page 651-353. This goes back to the previous segment where we were talking about The Athletic doing an article on different interviewing techniques for hiring by different college football coaches. Nick Saban was one of the ones that they went into great detail about. 651-353. How did Bill O'Brien impress Nick Saban by his magnificent trade record? LOL. Here's what I would say about Bill O'Brien. I bet Bill O'Brien does really well in job interviews.
No, yeah, very, very well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Ryan Fitzpatrick credited Bill O'Brien with kind of showing him a different level of football to aspire to.
Yeah.
And I think that's dead on accurate. I think that what Bill O'Brien would like to do with an offense is some pretty high level stuff. The problem comes in either A, doing what he can do when he realizes he doesn't have necessarily the ideal quarterback or the ideal, I guess Tom Brady to do it. But then B, just the actual execution. Like, the X's and O's, in theory, are really, really good. But when it comes to actually translating it onto the field, the offensive line never looked like what the hell they knew. They knew what the hell they were doing. The mental errors were embarrassing on that offense. And that's where the difference between the whiteboard and the field, there's a disconnect there with Bill O'Brien. In the job interview, I think that Saban was probably really impressed.
Absolutely. And here's what I would say about the Saban portion of this article as it pertains to O'Brien. For one thing, we know that O'Brien wasn't running his system at Alabama. He had to come in and learn the Alabama system. So whatever he was doing X's and O's wise was probably not super relevant to the interview or if it even came up. But the other thing I would say is if you read that Saban portion of that article, Saban is huge on finding guys that can communicate, that can sell. You know, it's not so much the X's and O's. Can you sell these X's and O's to the players, to your peers, in the position?
Can you command the room?
Can you command the room? Yeah, and I think O'Brien does have that capability. He definitely has a charisma about him.
Well, yeah, and I think he can command the room, too.
Yes.
Like, he's not going to – I think they kind of presented a picture in there of – like, if you're some little, wonder kid that's super, super smart with the X's and O's, but you're going to be facing, like, you're going to be there in a room with a bunch of guys with huge egos and a whole lot of testosterone. You better be able to do more than just, you know, whip your calculator around.
Yep.
and have a certain presence about you. And O'Brien does that.
Absolutely. I feel like I should have organ music playing right now because are you still the OG or are you a Reverend John Lopez now?
The Reverend OG.
Yeah.
My
Seth,
son.
Seth and I told the audience earlier this hour that you are now a certified minister?
Yes.
You're going to be officiating your son's wedding.
That's
All Reverend joking aside, that had to be really, really cool.
I was blown away.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking just almost in passing. By the way, we haven't even talked about who's going to do the wedding. And they both looked at each other and said, well, we've been wanting to ask you, so let's ask you right now.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm going to officiate my middle son's wedding in New York City, which, by the way, it's hard to get stuff going there. I got a lot of work to do.
Up in New York City?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You get the licenses you got to do in person and all this other stuff.
Most of the administrative
stuff.
Man. You got to bribe people too, Sean.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna have to bribe some people.
Read some palms.
Yeah. But I am officially the Reverend John P. Lopez.
What did you, was there an actual course involved or was it just filling out a lot of paperwork?
It was mostly paperwork, if I'm being honest.
What denomination is this?
I am. Well, here's a couple of really cool anecdotes. You know I was going to have some fun with it.
Yes.
You know I was going to.
Is this about Jesus? Is this a Jesus anecdote?
Kind of.
What could possibly go wrong?
So it's called the Universal Life Church, but you have to form your own ministry.
Oh.
So it's John Lopez, the Reverend John Lopez from the Universal Life Church. Trout Slick Ministry.
Okay, I saw that, and I'm like, the first part sounds real, the second part sounds made up, which is...
No, when there is a slick on the water,
yeah.
When trout are feeding, they regurgitate, so the oils come to the surface of the water, and they call that a slick.
No, I know that a trout slick is not a made-up thing, but yeah. that part, you the ministry is something you named.
Trout
the church
Slick
was
Ministries,
there already.
Baby.
Trout Slick Ministries. I like it. That's good branding.
So what's the metaphor there with the trout slick?
Well, I know. Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. Maybe we'll bring that up at some point. And the other thing that I didn't know until this morning when I was looking at some paperwork,
okay.
I'm going to get a clergyman's parking pass.
Oh, real?
No.
Dude,
baby.
In New York, that's a big deal. Oh, wait, hold on. Like for everywhere?
It's a clergyman's parking pass.
Yeah, but where is that?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to try to exploit the hell out of that. Sorry, God.
Well, yeah, I think you're going to have to go to church a lot more than you do now to exploit that. It's not like they have that outside the Kroger.
But like, let's say there's something going on outside the Kroger. You know, there's
what does that give you? Are you allowed to park like in handicap parking?
I'm thinking Texans game day, baby. I'll be like right there next to Hannah.
Okay,
and
if you do that on Texans game day, you have to wear some sort of outfit.
Oh, I'm
that
getting
is commensurate
a
commensurate with being.
I'm getting a stole.
A leader in the church.
Yeah,
I'm a clergyman.
Notable,
these are other Universal Life Church ministers, according to their website.
Oh no,
Conan O'Brien.
There we go.
Oh.
Stephen Colbert.
Okay.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
All right,
there you go.
All right.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
They've got a picture of The Rock.
They've got a picture of The Rock and Stephen Colbert officiating at weddings too.
There you go.
Sir Ian McKellen. You've joined Sir Paul McCartney.
Yeah,
the ranks here, man.
Entertainment greats like The Rock, Paul McCartney. John Lopez.
Ecclesiastical greats, Sean.
Ecclesiastical greats. Boy, that parking pass thing, you better be careful. If you believe in karma, I can see you. Not that this day should happen anytime soon, but someday you're going to get to those pearly gates, and old St. Peter's going to be waiting for you, thumbing through the clipboard here, going through the balance sheet that is John Lopez, most of which is very, very good, but he's going to run his finger down and go, now hold on a second here.
You parked at a concert?
See, for the last 30 years you were alive, you used a clergyman's parking pass.
John, you're the most entrepreneurial amongst all of us, because unlike the rest of us, you actually get your business ideas up off the ground.
Yeah.
But I would remind you that L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, did once write that the way you really get rich is religion. Don't take this lightly, John.
Weddings on the sea.
You can go far with this.
Weddings on the sea. I can invite people to come out on my boat, do their wedding on the water.
Dude.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to start to come up with your own little, become your own little sect.
That's what I need.
It's got to.
That's what I need is another cottage industry, a little cottage business. I got enough of those going on.
Absolutely. You just find a good manager and a good assistant to help you run things, man. So you're a radio host. You're a podcaster. Yeah. You are a sauce magnate. Yep. And now you are, what did you call it, Seth? An ecclesiastical leader. Again, what could possibly go
nothing,
wrong?
Nothing.
You know what you could do? You could take confessions.
How about a bris?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
not right now. I just ate. Come see me tomorrow. I'll shower first. What? We could probably get a lot of hits on that. John performs a second bris on Seth
Payne.
not often.
I'm going to need my power tools for that. I'm going to need my DeWalt.
I feel like the station is stagnating a little bit. We need something to create buzz.
I've got a little too much girth going on here. Let's clip off a little bit.
Before
more.
We go on, yeah. Lock Dog has been working hard in the lab, and he does his annual. He didn't get to do it Friday. He's going to play out the entire season.
Simulation. The Lock Dog simulation. Oh, I love the simulation.
Yeah, the simulation is going to happen.
Good deal.
All kinds of other stuff.
All right. Reverend, appreciate you jumping
son.
In as always. Thank you. A little crucifix. There we go.
Have a blessed day.
Thank you.
What do I and Jack Easterby have in common?
Oh, boy. Faith, family, and football,
baby. Yep, yep.
All right, we're done. We're out of time. Seth, antibodies to you.
Yeah, antibodies, and peace be with you.
Thank you. I knew that was coming. Knew that was coming. All right, we're done. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. In the Loop is up next. Have a great day, everybody.
Down, peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.